You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Profiling is the act of predicting behaviors based on a person's ethnicity, gender, or color. The cognizant you would never consider jumping to such irrational conclusions, but it sneaks into our lives on an unconscious level. We do this not only with people, but also with animals. All snakes are scary and dangerous. Pit bulls and Rottweilers are aggressive and shouldn't be allowed around children. Golden retrievers are hands down the best breed for a family, and all calico cats, though they may look cuddly, are actually untrustworthy and one whisker away from coming unglued. Sounds pretty ridiculous when said out loud, doesn't it? Breaking stereotypes of animal behavior and understanding their actions has been a passion for my guest, veterinarian Dr. Gary Weitzman, president and CEO of the San Diego Humane Society. His voice may sound familiar. He co-hosted The Animal House, a nationally distributed weekly program on public radio that explored the latest in animal science, pet health and behavior, and wildlife conservation. He is fluent in cat and dog speak, having written 3 books published by National Geographic, the first called Everything Dogs, and 2 books on animal behavior called How to Speak Dog and How to Speak Cat, with a 4th due out November 2017 on animal medicine, care, and behavior. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
It's hard to find time for your furry family member. That's where Camp Bow Wow comes in. All-day play and overnight camp, daycare and boarding for dogs. Everything is included. Large play areas for fun and exercise. Spacious cabins, comfy cots, even live camper cams to watch from a computer or smartphone. Camp Bow Wow offers the best care and is the place to go where a dog can be a dog. For locations and more information, visit campbowwow.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Weitzman, thank you very much for being with us. I think this is going to be interesting because I have 2 cats, and I can't always figure out what's going on in their little brains.
Yeah, I think we all feel that we're in the same boat on that one. Yeah, you've been working with cats for a long time, and I know you're an avid cat lover, too. So, with all the experience that we all have in cats, we still have to shrug our shoulders every now and then, or maybe more often than that, and wonder, what on earth are they thinking?
Well, give us a little bit of background of who is Dr. Gary Weitzman.
Oh, boy. Like you, went to vet school. I was on the other side of the country. I think you went to UC Davis, didn't you, Dr. Cruz?
Correct.
And I was out at Tufts on the other coast and really thought I wanted to make an impact on animals and thought it would be private practice for me. And I did that for a number of years and then realized I really wanted to do a little bit more than that. Not that there's anything that needs to be done more than private practice. As you know, it can be all encompassing.
But we all help each other.
Yeah. And I really wanted to get into animal shelter work. So I finally migrated that way, and it was about 20 years ago almost, and never looked back. And for me, working in an animal shelter and especially one like the San Diego Humane Society down here, obviously in San Diego, it's just, you can do everything. I mean, I can work in the clinic if I want to, work in surgery, or really try to devise schemes to make life better for animals overall. So it's been a great journey.
Too many people think of shelters as being the last stop. They're animals that have been on the road, they're animals that are just really bad, or else their owners would never give them up. The majority of the pets that you have there at the shelter, how do they get to you?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You're right. The stereotypes of animals in an animal shelter, when we used to call it the pound, quote unquote, are very different than it is now. I mean, the pound really, animals with the same back in the turn of the 19th, of the 20th century, just as they are now. But we get so many different situations happening that it's not easy to conclude that there's, or reliable to conclude that there's any one type of animal in a shelter, in a rescue group, or even with a breeder. So our animals, of which we've got easily up to 18,000 to 20,000 a year. That's just the companion animals, and then add another 10,000 or more wildlife to our census here in San Diego. That's a lot of animals, and it's very probably dangerous to say that there's any general type of animal that's here. But sure, there are some that have not been in the best situations, maybe have not had the best home situations. And then there are other ones that are absolute the epitome of what you'd be looking for if you went to a breeder. So, you know, we like to joke that hybrid vigor is a great thing in genetics and certainly in shelters. Animals in a shelter often are more than one breed, but we also very, very often, more than I think the public knows, have purebreds as well. So it really, it's like taking a town and saying everybody in that town is one type, same way in a shelter. There, we have everything from animals that have possibly been in an abuse situation to puppies that are born to a golden retriever that ended up in the shelter for a number of reasons.
So these animals are a little bit of everything of how they come to you. Are some of them behavioral reasons? Because I know it's one of the things we always try to stress when we get a new puppy kitten in, of getting them socialized, getting all these behavioral issues under control, because it may look really cute when they're nibbling on your hand and they're a little puppy with those needle teeth. And then when it's 3 years old and it's still nibbling on your hand or your friends and neighbors when they come over, it's not so cute anymore.
Right.
So what are some of the top behavioral reasons why animals are relinquished to a shelter?
Yeah, you know, for us, it really is the behavior reasons are up there. Now, we've had debate for the last maybe 5 to 10 years about what the number one reason is that animals are relinquished to a shelter. And I don't think there's no conclusion that there is a number one reason, but behavior certainly ranks there very highly. Of the behaviors for dogs, it really is the spectrum of inability to stay alone in a house all the way to destructive separation anxiety. So that can be a very difficult thing for any animal owner to deal with. We fortunately, and you know this, I think, Bernadine, that there are so many new methods now and some medications that help dogs with separation-related behaviors. But that certainly is one that makes the life of a dog owner very challenging. So that can be one reason that a dog may get relinquished to a shelter. For us, though, I'll tell you, the number one reason, while behavior can be a factor, is really the change in life for the owner, for the human part of this, not usually the dog or the cat. But we still, I mean, obviously, you know, we opened a behavior center 3 years ago.
And
it was literally to take care of those dogs and cats that the public was not really noticing or not interested in because of behavior reasons. So we've done a lot of behavior work with them. So you're absolutely right. The behavior is a major factor, but I'd say that at least 3/4 of our animals are just the same animals you would get at really a good breeder or a rescue group or anything that you were actually had that bubble in your head of the perfect dog that you might end up taking home.
You'd mentioned cats coming in also. Mm-hmm. Some of the common, yes, we see way too often separation anxiety. People think that it's so much fun that that pet is with them 24/7. You know, they go to the bathroom, the pet's there. They go out shopping and now they go to the big box store with them. I look at some of these people going, really? I have a feeling your pet might like a little downtime. You don't want to be around people all the time. Sometimes your pet may just appreciate when they learn how to be alone, just to have that little bit of confidence. Hey, I can be here at the house by myself. Mom and dad are gone. I can do this. But it does take some training to get there. How about kitties? What are you seeing with cats?
You're absolutely right. And, you know, we really stress that while your dog may prefer to be with you in the end, if you were to ask him, also sleeping in your bed, you forgot that part too. So they're us all day and then they sleep with us in bed, which I love that part. So that's fine. But we want independence too. We want them to be confident, independent creatures so that you don't have to worry when you leave. Cats, the same thing. And I think in a way, and you're a cat lover too, in a way, the cat equation is almost the opposite of the dogs in people's minds. whereas in reality, they're very, very similar. They just behave differently about it, react differently about it. So when people say, yeah, I want to get a cat instead of a dog because I go on a lot of trips and I don't want to deal with having a dog sitter or a pet sitter. I don't, you know, cats are so easy. Just put out food, change the litter every 2 days. It makes me just cringe because, oh my gosh, cats need way more than that. They need company and socialization and enrichment, and they need all those things. And so when they don't have it, and you hit on something just now, when they don't have it, cats more than dogs end up in our shelter because they don't have the tools that they need to have enriched lives, and their responses are what we find difficult to live with, you know, i.e. not using the litter box. You know, we all love that. The new, you know, basket of laundry that the cat decides that's a better litter box in, tearing around the house, ripping up furniture, all the things, because we've really, really markedly altered the environment that we expect these little beings to live in, way, way more than dogs. And dogs, by the way, as you know, I'm sure, they've had about 20,000 more years to figure out how to live with humans than cats have.
They're still not really sure, those cats, whether or not they want to live with us. But you're right, Dr. Weitzman. You know, I feel badly because working at the clinic, there are long hours that many times are put in. So I have bird feeders outside that the kitties can watch, and I have a kitty perch so they can look out the window, and the neighbors love it because, you know, they're always, when I'm home, they don't know that I'm here, and windows open, they're talking to my cats. And then I also have a kitty cam, so when I'm not here, I can watch and see what they're doing. But it can play with them and I can talk to them. So I feel a little less guilty. And you brought up something that's so important. Oh, yes. You know, I scoop the kitty box every 2 days. And when people come in and we're talking about litter box issues, one of the first questions I ask is, so how often do you clean it? Oh, I don't know, maybe twice a week. I said, oh, so yeah. how often do you flush your toilet? Oh.
Right.
Each time.
Hey, I'm going to use that. That's a very good response.
And all of a sudden, their eyes fly open, going, oh, that is kind of disgusting. Going, exactly.
And imagine how the cat feels, who has the ability to smell about 30 times more than we do. So yeah, that's very true. But you know, there are challenges for these animals living with us, and that's what we, you know, especially now that the behavior field is expanding our knowledge base and often, you know, techniques as well as some medications, we are learning that there are things to make life better for these animals, and a lot of it has to do with giving them a job, and that's for dogs and cats.
You had mentioned mental enrichment. Is that giving them a job, and what do you do to keep their little brains active?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and I bet you will probably agree, the most important thing you can do for a dog or a cat is to give them a job and make their brains work. So we have all these things now. We have Busy Buddy toys. We have treat dispensing toys, food dispensing toys for whole meals for dogs, all the things that make them start thinking and actually working and playing toward getting their reward. And that can be everything from just a treat to full meals. We have animals in the shelter that, you know, we don't have a time limit here in San Diego. So we want to make sure these animals are still thriving, even if they're here for a half a year or more. So one of the ways is let's put their food in a puzzle. And honestly, they need it. And you can see the difference in that animal. The stress level just plummets because we've given him something to do. And same thing for cats. And even not in a shelter, just talking about pure cat behavior, enrichment is so critical. We take these animals that from the second they're born, I'll back up. From like 5 days in, let's let their eyes open. From 10 days in, they're thinking about hunting. You know, that they're hunters. And everything they do, you know this, everything they do is to learn to hunt. And their play behaviors are all hunting-based. And then we get them in a home, and we never let them hunt again. And, you know, I don't love to see animals hunt. I mean, you know, I don't like the prey predator thing any more than anybody else who loves animals likes to see that. But it certainly is a natural behavior for cats. And on the other hand, we don't want them outside, especially here in California, because we've got coyotes. So, and then if you don't have coyotes, you might be in a city, you have cars and everything else that limits their lifespan. And I remember, you know, Nick Dodman, the wonderful behaviorist out at Tufts.
Yes.
You know, he wrote, I remember going to a lecture, and he's a fantastic guy. And I'm sure you probably interviewed him. But he actually said that we have decided to give cats long life but not necessarily a happy one, rather than a happy life, which might be shorter. And he said it way better, and he has a great British accent, so it comes out better. But cats need a job. They need to be hunting, and what you just described, to put perches up in windows so cats can watch birds and cats can watch other cats, although, you know, that can lead to some destructive behaviors too. That's fantastic, because that's what they want to do. They want to be hunting and prowling and pouncing and stalking, and they want to play at night, and it's not exactly always a good fit for the humans in the house.
One thing, Dr. Weitzman, that we see too many fat cats, fat dogs coming into the practice. And dogs, okay, you can get them out going for a walk. Kitties, like, all right, what are we going to do for cats? One of the things, and you probably recommend that also from your behavior center for the new adoptees, especially their little chunk among kitties, is I hide the food in various places of the house. So instead of being just one place, all right, you're going to go to the kitchen and on the floor, there's your food. All right, there's going to be a little bowl that's in the bathroom and another little bowl that's in the front room. And, you know, the same amount of food, but it's spread throughout the house. So the cat's going like, dang, where did she put it this time? Mm-hmm. So they have to keep moving their little paws to find it. And I totally agree with you. With my cats, I have a feeder toy. And it's fascinating to watch them try to figure out how to get their paw in there and get the food out. And sometimes like, hey, you want it? Go get it.
Yeah, brilliant. That's exactly what you should do. Make it a game and make it a hunt. Make them feel like they're out in the jungle somewhere. It's perfect.
And if they want their kitty treats, I throw them and they have to go get them. So it's not a lot of exercise, but it's some.
I know.
You had mentioned anxious pets. How does a person realize their pet is anxious? They're not going to be sitting there typically chewing on their little toenails. So how do they know?
Well, for dogs, you know, you and I both know that we see dogs sometimes with lip granulomas, and that can certainly be a physical manifestation of anxiety, or maybe more complex than that, but that certainly would be kind of the equivalent. I always tell people the equivalent of chewing your nails. But in a dog, I mean, let's
say lip granulomas, please tell them what lip granulomas
is. Oh, yes. It's those horrible sores that dogs can create on the inside of their front legs because they're so, they may be stressed or they may be bored or there may be other mechanisms as well, but they're really terrible things that actually we have a lot of trouble healing, don't we? So for dogs, I think the anxiety can be manifested in a number of ways. That certainly would be one way. But more commonly, it's from behaviors. So destructive behaviors in the house, sometimes separation-related behaviors, you know, all the way to taking down a door frame. But it can be more subtle than that. It can be constant barking, or it can be drooling, or it can be whining, inability to leave you alone. That can be due to stress. My dog, Jake, a German Shepherd, one of the more challenging dogs in the world, is especially when it's named Jake and it happens to be mine. He's quite a handful. He had, until he was about 7 years old, impossible to ride in a car with because of his stress level. So he was either, and never determined if it was because he was so excited about getting to Rock Creek Park out in the District of Columbia, or it was because he was so nervous about being in the car. So, you know, we can see this whole gamut of reactions in our dogs, but mostly it's, you know, it is stress, and stress is often from boredom. For cats, we know that they're less subtle, aren't they? When those animals are stressed, the number one thing we deal with is litter box issues.
Yes.
And that's unfortunate. And I think that for people to realize it's not necessarily an infection or an anatomic or physiological issue, I'd even go as far as to say 95% of the time it's from stress or anxiety. And then the last thing, and probably the number one with cats, is other cats. So that's something that, you know, when you have a cat, you love cats, you want to get other cats, you really need to sit down and have a good chat with your cat before you do that, because they may not be on the same page on that score.
Oh, also true. We definitely need to chat more about this because you're hitting on some wonderful topics. But we also need to take a break right now. So I'm speaking right now with Dr. Gary Weitzman. He is the CEO of the San Diego Humane Society. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
You think that you're rescuing them, but honestly, they're going to end up rescuing you. You don't know what they've gone through. And they're not going to be perfect. And they are so happy that you are taking a chance on them to be a part of your family. I urge you to go down to your local shelters, pounds, dog rescues, foundations, you name it, and rescue a dog. Once you get your rescue dog, you should definitely order some DinoVite. Go online and order it. DinoVite.com. DinoVite. It's awesome stuff. 90 days of DinoVite will make your dog a happy dog. It will help them with their overall health. You don't need to spend thousands on vet bills. DinoVite is the best thing that's ever happened to my dogs, you know, besides me, of course. Call 859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DinoVite.com.
Begging to hear more of your favorite show? Full episodes of all our shows are available on demand. Go to PetLifeRadio.com to fetch our entire lineup of Possum Pet Podcasts. Also, dig us up in iHeartRadio Talk and iTunes. Let's talk pets. Live and on demand, only from Pet Life Radio.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Weitzman, these are just some awesome things that you're talking about, the anxiety aspect. And one of the things that kind of go along with anxiety, going, wow, animals really feel anxiety. You tend to anthropomorphize, giving human feelings to our pets. You know, you were saying, boy, before we bring another pet in, another cat in particular, sit down, talk to your cat, and see if they want a friend. And boy, that just smacks so much of what I've recently gone through. I, up to probably 3 weeks ago, had three cats, and now I have two. Because my baby just suddenly died, had a major cardiac issue died. And she was, I know, her name was Lydia, and she was the most pugnacious, outgoing, assertive little black and white tuxedo kitty. And I thought the other ones kind of liked her. And now that she's passed, it's like, oh my goodness, seeing the behavior change. My middle child, who I thought was my special education child, because she was always very laid back, wouldn't play. And my old girl, who just seems extra old, didn't want to move around. Now that Lydia's gone, my old girl is up and about and moving around more. So I think Lydia was somewhat damping down her behavior. And my young one, is really this outgoing, fun cat. It's like, oh, I think they put arsenic in her milk because they're really happy without her being here now. It's like, I don't think I'll be getting a third for a while.
Oh, boy. That's really incredible.
Do pets really have emotions that we can tie into, saying their joy is like ours?
Oh, boy. You know, that's actually really fascinating what you just described, because the hierarchy shifted, didn't it? I mean, that's kind of amazing.
Dramatic.
I have a friend here who lost her dog, and the torture that she and her husband went through in losing that dog over a number of months was something I wanted to help them with. When it finally happened, and I saw them a few weeks later, they told me their other dog was blossoming and just became a different animal, and they had no idea. They didn't see anything that there was, you know, a dampening of effect from the other dog. So, you know, I certainly think that we could be cynical and we could all say that, well, no, in your case, Brendan, your cats were probably, there was a hierarchy, and we don't love the word dominance. You know, we're relating to cats and dogs anymore, but there's a hierarchy and it was just a hierarchy situation. But I think, and I bet you do too, that it's way more than that. Listen, if we can say now that there are studies out there, and I can't cite them, but I can get them for any of your listeners, that determine and really document social order and social behaviors in chickens, why on earth would we not think that cats and dogs who have lived with us for 10 to 30,000 years have not also developed a way to have a rapport with us and to have the same feelings and emotions in all of that that we do. Now, would I go as far as saying that there are hopes and dreams? Not, probably not, but there certainly are all the spectrum of in-the-moment feelings that we would have too. And that's why I think we love them so much, because they are what they are right then and there and now. And they're not thinking about where we're going to go or what I have to do at work tomorrow, all of that. But I think they have very complex emotions and very complex needs. And we're just now learning to answer those. We're doing it for farm animals too. And that's that's fantastic to me, because I think we will see the end in the next decade of confinement livestock practices, like chickens, sows, and gestation crates, all of that. And, you know, here, it's about time.
It's a very difficult subject, but it is one that needs to be addressed very, very definitely. There are devices that are out there, and we're talking about trying to understand, you know, what our pets are saying. They have these collars that dogs can wear, and then they will tell you that, oh, yes, your dog is saying such and such. What are your feelings about these deciphering collars?
Well, I think mine will be the same as yours, because you could hardly get through that question without laughing at the end either. So, I don't think it's ever going to be like that, like something from Star Wars, where we get actually, you know, a subtitled message from what our dogs are barking at or our cats are meowing at. But I think we can understand what they're saying, and saying is in quotes, of course. I don't want to get that anthropomorphic, but I don't think those things really work. Those are gimmicks. They are popular, I think, right now in Japan, and they're coming this way, I think, pretty quickly. But I don't expect that I'm going to have a deeper understanding of my dog's or my cat's needs by having that translation device happen. But I do think that you can learn what your dog and your cat is, quote-unquote, saying by knowing that animal. I mean, cats are remarkable. I think the most amazing proof that there's a bond between cats and their people, that cats actually need us for more than just food, water, and shelter, is that they don't communicate to anybody but their humans. So when kittens are young, they'll often meow at each other and make noises and do all those wonderful, beautiful kitten things. And we know now, you know, we certainly know that cats don't have any of that communication with other cats unless it's a fight. Now, that's a whole different story. But the only thing, the only person, the only creatures that cats meow at are their humans. There's some, obviously, occasional exceptions to that. But for the most part, they just communicate, vocalize with us. If there's not any, there's no better proof in anywhere that that to me substantiates that cats really do need us and have a bond with us.
And they do talk to us. Yes, my middle child, now my young one, she can get very sassy. If I'm in the kitchen, she knows where her kitty treat jar is. And if I don't give it to her, it's like, whoa, okay, if that were a human child, you're having a timeout and you're going in the corner for speaking to me that way.
Yeah, you know what it means too. You don't have to think about it. You don't need a Fitbit to translate that.
And they've trained me. It's like, okay, fine. Here's a little treat.
Right. Of course. Yeah. You know, in How to Speak Cat with National Geographic a couple of years ago, that came out probably a year and a half ago. We do talk a little bit. There's some research that there may be a dozen and a half really separate vocalizations that adult cats will do. And that doesn't mean that those individual quote-unquote phrases are the same for every cat. But what it does mean is that if you were to take your iPhone or another phone and record the vocalizations that your cat does over the course of a week, you could actually see a pattern of what those mean. The sound of I want food in the morning probably is the same every single morning. The sound of I want a treat could be the same. I want to go out. I'm stressed about the bird on the branch. I mean, you could get that molecular about it. And that could be your, you know, Webster's dictionary of cat, you know, cat language. But it would be different than the cat next door. So that's why I don't think we're going to really ever have an accurate deciphering device. But I also think that there's a lot more in communication, and we say this in the books, than just the vocalizations. As a matter of fact, vocalizations are probably the least reliable ways to communicate with your animal. Now, for us, of course, we will vocalize. But for them, we need to learn how to read their body language and everything else they're telling us.
So you look at that little cat tail that's flap, 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 and they're just sitting there looking at you. That tail means?
Oh, yeah, it means about 17 different things, you know that, but way different than a dog's tail, right? We have probably 1,000 kids that come through the Humane Society every year to be in our education classes or camps, and one of the first things we tell them with dogs and cats is look at the tail. Well, we start at the eyes, at the face. But the tail is really important. And kids thinking that dogs wagging their tail mean that that's a safe dog, we want to disabuse them of that notion right away, because that's always the case. Cats, that tail is so complex. I mean, straight up in the air is a how do you do kind of thing. But in a dog, it's quite the opposite, unless, of course, they're that kind of a dog that only has their tail up in the air. But a swishing tail, yeah, that's not the cat you necessarily want to go pet right away. But you know that on your own cat, and we all know it innately, I think. But it's very important to start teaching kids that.
Dr. Weitzman, please address purring. people so many times, and it's a very sad situation, may have a cat that is deathly ill. And it's hard for many people to realize that there's an issue because, oh, my cat is still purring.
Right. Yeah, and we've seen that in the exam rooms, haven't we? Often cats purring, it is a nice sound. It's my favorite cat sound. I think it's everybody's favorite cat sound, but it's not always a happy cat. So cats can purr for a number of reasons. Often it's because they're comfortable and relaxed, but it doesn't always have to be the case. They can be nervous. They can be scared and purr. They can. It's almost equivalent in a way to what a dog will do when he's nervous, and he'll yawn. I think a purr can be that kind of a trigger as well. So there are a number of different purrs. I have a friend who's a veterinarian in Washington, D.C., and she said she's counted 17 different purr sounds with her cat. I think that's a complex vocalization. I like to, you know, as a general rule, I like to think that it is a content cat, but not always. And, you know, we have seen sick cats that will purr. I think it's an appeasement noise for us. It's to let us know that either they're okay or fake it and really let us know that they just, there's nothing to be alarmed about and they don't want to escalate whatever situation is happening. So very much like a dog with a yawn.
Sometimes I tell clients, especially if a pet I know is in pain and it's purring, it'd be somewhat like you and I trying to meditate and having that sound. It just helps you go to a different place so you don't have to concentrate on what you're dealing with on a temporary level, on that.
Yeah, that's excellent. That's probably right. That really is. Boy, that would be a better mantra sound for me than anything else I can think of. That would work.
In the intro to this piece right now, it was talking about kind of profiling and different breeds of dogs, different breeds of cats. You know, sometimes even my own staff at the hospital go, oh, it's another crazy calico cat. I mean, wait a minute. I had a calico cat. It was wonderful. Or thinking that, you know, I have clients come in with golden retrievers that are just the spazzes of the century.
Right.
And they're really not ones that I totally trust. Mm-hmm. What's your view on breeds and profiling?
Oh, yeah. You know, I think it's the fact that you really can't profile anything accurately. We have generalizations, and often they are true, but to profile, every animal is an individual. So every dog, every cat, every single one of them has its own personality quirks, behavior that it's learned or has genetically been passed to that dog. But I don't think profiling is a great idea. Now, you know, having said that, we all see in the news day after day after day, unfortunately, something about a pit bull doing something that we wish we hadn't just read. And I'm a real fan of that breed, and I'm a strong advocate of pit bulls, but they're not for everybody. And often those dogs have had a bad time before they've even gotten to the place where they're up for adoption or they're being sold by a private individual. So we do make generalizations, and I think we have to, and I don't think we can get away from that. But every animal is an individual, and you're right. Calicos aren't always those crazy, crazy animals, and Abbeys aren't always mean, and Siamese don't always bite, but they do always vocalize a lot. So there are some generalizations, but honestly, environment makes a gigantic difference here, and genetics make a difference, and I don't think that it's reliable, and I agree with you that it to base all of that on a profile. I really don't. And, you know, one of the dangerous aspects of it is we're seeing legislation throughout the country. It's not passing very quickly, which is good, on breed profiling. So to ban pit bulls in Denver or Prince George's County, Maryland, and it's come up in California, those are terrible ideas. And we know they actually hurt the breed, the relationship, and they make things worse because people that would have those animals that might not take care of them won't care about the ban. So I think those things, that gets to the dangerous part about profiling. But if you would just want to say, you know, an Abbey or a Calico or, you know, a Siamese X like X, Y, or Z, that's just a generalization. But you're right, you can have a Golden Retriever that's completely crazy.
It happens way too often.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to an animal shelter or rescue group and is looking for their new forever friend. What should they look for? How should they determine if this is going to be the right animal? What can they do to optimize their chances?
Oh, yeah. First and foremost, meet the adoption counselor. So any shelter should have a really knowledgeable, really enthusiastic counselor there to sit down with you. And it's interesting, you may have an idea of an animal that you want to go home with, but that certainly may not be the animal that you actually go home with, because there are obviously those individual traits that we were just talking about. But I think the most important thing is to have an advocate at that shelter for you. So whether it's a shelter or a rescue group or even a good breeder, you want someone that actually you can sit down and talk to who understands what your life environment is going to be like, what you're looking for, what your hopes and dreams are, and then tries to match it as well as possible with that animal. You know, a couple of years ago, I walked into a Starbucks and I saw a sign there that said, your drink should be perfect or something like that, or we'll make it perfect. Just let us know. And I realized, you know what? We need to say something like that in animal shelters, because people ought to be able to bring an animal back that may not absolutely work for them without feeling terrible and guilty. And then let's get them a different animal. And then what we got with that animal is, being out for a few days or a few weeks, we get so much more information about that animal from that person that spent some time with them. And we also had a chance to have that animal leave the shelter for a few days or a few weeks. So I think that for people, it should really be a mutually win-win situation. You meet with someone great at a shelter who can really, really help you find an animal that sounds like it'll fit into your house really well, and then try it out. And that's the best, probably the best situation possible.
I love that idea of the test drive with the pet, because too many times people come in and I can just tell by the way that they're interacting with this animal, this is really not working out.
Right. This wasn't what they were thinking of.
And I'll say, okay, many times these are new clients that are just walking through the door. You don't know me. I don't know you. But this is kind of what I'm picking up. So I'll say, excuse me, but do you want this pet or a pet?
Right.
And it's like, oh, I said, okay. And thankfully, the shelters around my hospital will take pets back, and they are no kill shelters. So they don't have to feel badly that, oh, I'm taking this bad and it's going to be destroyed and I'm such a bad person. It's like, no, this needs to be something that you enjoy. The pet has to be a fabulous part of your life and not cause turmoil and trauma.
Oh, absolutely. And they feel terrible anyway. And that's what we want to do, is to make sure that people don't feel terrible. If it didn't work out, tell us everything you can about that animal and we'll find the right home for that animal. But let's find you another one. And it's a partnership. And, you know, you go to a shelter. That's what I'm always hoping. Go to a shelter, go to a rescue first. If you don't find that animal, check with us. We'll help you maybe with a breeder or find that animal for you. I think there are great breeders out there. So they're terrific too. We don't like the puppy mill situations, of course. And pet stores may not always be the best place to get an animal. Actually, they usually aren't, unfortunately. But a good breeder would be great. But we want it to be a really good match. And that's why you should be able to come back with information. Hey, that's not going to work, be the best situation for me or that dog. Do you have somebody else? And here's what I learned. I think it's a win-win for everybody.
Dr. Weitzman, thank you. This has been, I could keep going on and on for another half
me
hour.
Me too. Sorry, I probably did.
So if people want to know more about what's going on between their animal's ears, you can always talk to your veterinarian. There are board certified veterinary behaviors. But to start off, if you need a new pet, consider going to an animal shelter and asking the right questions. We've been talking right now to Dr. Gary Weitzman. He is the president and CEO of the San Diego Humane Society. Dr. Weitzman, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Love talking to you.
This is Dr. Bernadine Cruz. You've been listening to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. Please tune in next week, where we'll have more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner. Have a great week.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.